You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Tumnus and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to episode 14 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. I'm KT with my man Serge. Serge, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Happy Easter to you, brother.
Hey, same to you. Hey, were you the one that bit Beyonce on the face?
No, definitely not. That was not me.
So they apparently said it was Sanaa Lathan.
Oh.
They okay. Said Sanaa Lathan was the one that did it. And if I'm gonna bite Beyonce, I'm not biting her on the face. If you know what I mean.
Other places.
Yeah, so speaking of other places, let's try to find another spot for Odell Beckham. First of all, should the Giants trade Odell Beckham Jr.?
Man, I personally don't think so. I think he's – obviously there's been some, you know, mishaps with him. There's been stuff on the field. There's been stuff, you know, distractions that he's, you know, gotten himself into. But I think as long as, you know, if there's any domestic violence issue or anything to that degree – and I just don't know, like, even if you were to trade him, like, you're just not going to get equal value. I mean, he's a proven commodity. So I'm not really sure how you would make it worthwhile for your needs, especially depending on what your future outlook is for your entire team, not just Odell Beckham. So if it's something that, oh, we don't want to pay him, you know, highest paid receiver or player in the league, and we'd rather just go in a different direction, you know, we don't want to deal with the distractions, then yeah. But if I just don't think they should, but that's just my personal opinion. I think he should stay with the Giants. He should be able to stay with the Giants, but...
But they're asking for two number ones. Now, if I'm the Giants, I would think about that because, I mean, look at... Eli's on his way out, so you got about 2 years left. Unless you get your quarterback now and build with Odell, I don't see why you would go ahead and keep him. I would just go ahead and get two number ones and just roll with that.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody's willing to take it out there, then yeah, I think it would be in their best interest. And if the right team for that particular team that comes along, they know this is the move that's going to put them more than likely over the top. I mean, you know, there's a few teams out there that could definitely do that and really, really put themselves in that upper echelon of, you know, guaranteeing yourself in a position to be definitely, you know, competing in the playoffs.
And speaking of the right team, I told you my list off air, so I think the Saints would be a good team, a good landing spot. Team. Not only that, remember back in the day, it may have been 2 years ago, him and Drew Brees, they broke the Guinness World Record of the one-hand catches.
Oh, yeah.
See, people forgot about that. Yeah. So they sleeping. So Green Bay, they need a true number one.
Green Bay, I mean, think about Aaron Rodgers and Odell Beckham, and you got
Adams.
Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb. I mean.
And the tight end. They got Jimmy Graham, right?
Jimmy Graham. Mm-hmm.
So could you imagine that?
Yeah, their offense would be super potent. So, I mean, the Saints also, like you said, they wouldn't be a bad team. And I think a couple of the other teams you mentioned were the 49ers. I mean, with the moves that they're making on the defensive side of the ball to go with Jimmy G, to put Odell Beckham with Jimmy G, I mean, that would be. That would be awesome, and put 49ers really, really back on the map like they used to be, you know, in the 90s and stuff. So,
and from one of the reports, the team that he wants to play for, who they were going to try to get him, are the Rams.
Right.
If he goes to the Rams, that's a wrap. What can you do? You can't stop Gurley and him. Do you put Gurley in a slot and you can just move him anywhere?
And you're not scoring on their defense.
No.
So.
And you have a smart and young offensive coordinator that knows how to use his talent. Man, isn't that nice?
That's a scary, scary proposition for the rest of the league. I mean, the fact that the two teams we just mentioned are both in the same division, too. I mean, without Odell Beckham, they're already, like, probably Super Bowl potential bound. And, I mean, definitely the Rams and the 49ers aren't too far behind. But the 49ers seemingly could use him more. But, man, if the Rams somehow were to pull that off, because they don't need – there's not any particular position that they really need help in. So it's like, yeah, we can afford the two first-round picks.
Yeah.
And add in a couple others if it has to sweeten the deal. Because we got the quarterback, we got the running back, we got defense locked up. I mean, their offensive line seems pretty good for Todd Gurley to be running like that. So, and they didn't lose anybody of significance. So, I mean, man, that's...
Serge, if that trade happens, that team is going to the Super Bowl. It's no excuses.
Barring no injuries, I don't say anything.
Super Bowl. I said Cleveland, but they got enough receivers.
So I mean, the with the guys that they picked up Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, they got Coleman. They got Josh Gordon.
Still there.
Yeah, so they got plenty of receivers. So I'm taking them off the list. But one that not a lot of people talk about, I think the L.A. Chargers.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers has never had a true number one guy like this besides Antonio Gates.
Right.
So, and they got Melvin Gordon at running back. Yeah. That could really help their offense out a lot. So we'll see about that. All right, let's move on to Johnny Manziel, who says that he will play in the CFL if the NFL is interested. And the other day he went and he threw at Texas A&M Pro Day, and you watched the Scott Van Pelt interview.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about this one?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool to see him, you know, obviously just being able to be out there on the field and obviously showing that, you know, the talent that he used to have coming out of college, you know, most of it that he still has. To be able to have, you know, a few teams from the NFL be able to come out there and just see, you know, you're just going against really yourself at that point, you know, when you do pro day. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see if somebody's at least willing to give him a tryout. And so that going against competition with pads on against other teams and, you know, reading coverages, et cetera, things like that. And like you mentioned, like he would be more than inclined to take the offer to go to the CFL if the NFL you know, closer to the season doesn't end up working out for him. But yeah, as far as the interview goes with Scott Van Pelt, I mean, it was pretty eye-opening, man, to see that, you know, I could tell just by reading his body language and his tone of voice, it was completely different than when he was first coming out of college. Obviously, he's grown up to be a man, I guess you could say. And, you know, just making the necessary changes in his life to understand that, you know, all that partying lifestyle and just traveling all the time, going to the clubs and things like that, I think, you know, slowed down for him. You know, he's apparently he's found a significant other that has been able to be a unique partner for him, who's helped him kind of, you know, shape his life and, you know, make sure that his interest in football is just strictly football, but that there's more things important in life. And I think that can, you know, that can go a long ways. And, you know, to be able to be a, you know, settled down, but, you know, a true adult, taking care of your responsibilities. And now when you go back into doing football, you just know, like, hey, if I just work hard, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, then, you know, I have a good support system around me. I need to use that to my advantage. And so I think it was really great to see. I'm praying that things work out for him, that he can make a good comeback story come really to life, and that this is something kind of like similar to, you know, maybe even like a Tiger Woods, where, you know, after a couple of years of hiatus, you know, being able to come back in the limelight where people really are rooting for you. Because I think a lot of people are rooting for him coming out of college, but then kind of knowing his body size and knowing it's not going to translate into the NFL, kind of like Tim Tebow. But I feel like he had more talent than Tim Tebow, especially throwing the ball. So
yeah, he was faster too.
Right, but he just didn't have that it factor. But that it factor was kind of like not really there, not because he didn't want to. It was more that he was distracted by so many other things, so he wasn't making football a priority as where it should be. Or if he was making it a priority, he wasn't giving his full best effort because he was probably always having thoughts about, oh, what am I going to do tonight after practice, as opposed to putting in my 100% while I'm at practice.
Yeah, but I love the redemption story, but if he gets a second shot, Colin Kaepernick deserves one too.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I agree. Well, I just think that it's because of the two, and I think he, you know, that's another thing about him that you can realize and notice that there's a change. Is as soon as he said that he's going to be doing a pro day and things like that, you know, he automatically started getting, I wouldn't say backlash, but there's a lot of people making comments about, like, oh, how is he going to get another chance? And, you know, this is what's wrong with America, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, he took to Instagram and, you know, made posts where he's supporting Colin Kaepernick, that he feels like he should be in the NFL. And this has nothing to do with, you know, anything to do with football. The reason why he's not in there is, has to obviously deal with his kneeling and his protesting. So the fact that, the things are the way they are, the fact that, you know, nobody has given him another opportunity yet, it's because nobody else will want to take that chance of going through the distraction that it's going to come with. Like, I mean, the media circus that's going to surround the team. Like, if you were to even give him an opportunity to be just even a backup, I mean, any team is going to know that we got to know what we're walking into, and we're going to get all this. There's going to be some backlash initially. There's going to be a lot of media coverage. Are you prepared to handle all of that? And but it's like, you know, and then they look at it, it's like, oh, our starting quarterback, even if we were to switch it out with Colin Kaepernick, is our team good enough to probably compete and go to the playoffs and compete for a championship? And a lot of these guys probably wind up saying no. And that's why I feel like he's not getting that opportunity. And I mean, it is at the end of the day, it's still going to be blackballing. That is what it is. But I think it would still be pretty cool to just see that somebody that didn't look like he ever even had a chance, not forget the NFL, but just in life, to be able to be successful because of the decisions and people he was surrounding himself with and partying and all that. You know, young college graduated kid who does, you know, has money, doesn't necessarily need to work. So, you know, things kind of came easy for him. So in that sense, I think it would be pretty cool to, you know, to know that, hey, like he's, you know, not doing the drugs and not drinking and going out all the time. And he's pulling his life together, whether he ever makes it back in the NFL or even plays in the CFL and is even successful. I think it's besides the point. You know, so Colin Kaepernick doesn't have to prove, you know, that, or he doesn't really have a comeback story that is going to be of relevance because he was already a good quarterback. He's proven himself in the league, which is why it's more frustrating why people don't give him that chance.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. So let's move on to, I'm going to read a quote for you. It's so hard to be a hero in a city that paints you out to be a villain. And that's not from a scene in Batman or anything. That's Le'Veon Bell.
That's what it sounded like.
For that's exactly what it sounded like. That's from Le'Veon Bell, how he feels he is viewed in Pittsburgh. What are your thoughts on his comments?
He just wants to get paid. He feels like he'll pretty much say anything because he wants his money. And I'm really still, you know, I just don't understand why the Steelers haven't paid him the money that I feel like he deserves.
Well, I can understand why. I know his injury history and the drugs and all of that, but coming off last year, the man balled, and y'all are so much better with him. So why not go ahead and pay him and get him taken care of?
Right. I mean, especially considering that, you know, Big Ben's going to come off the books in the next year or two. So the only people that you're really paying high money to is going to be Antonio Brown and him. And without those two guys, you have – if one of those guys are not there, you're not making the Super Bowl.
No.
I mean, you might be squeezing into the playoffs if everything else goes right, you know, if you don't have one of those guys. So – I think it's in their best interest to do that. So I can feel his kind of, you know, sentiments as far as, like, you know, being able to say, because unless he puts it out there where he makes it seem like, you know, it's all on the Steelers why this isn't getting done or why I have to end up saying these kind of things. Because I guarantee you, if he got paid, you ain't going to be hearing any of these kind of quotes from him.
Yeah, but it's not smart because it's like he's taking shots at the fans. And we know how the Pittsburgh diehards, the Steel City, you know, it's just not a good look.
No, it's not. I agree with that.
So, speaking of look, the Patriots, you know, they've had Tom Brady.
A long time.
So, if Tom Brady goes down this year, they don't have another. No, they had what? Hoyer, right?
They have Hoyer.
Okay, so with that said, Brian Hoyer. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Should the Patriots draft a quarterback in this draft?
I don't think so. I think they could wait probably another year. I think if they're confident in Tom Brady, I mean, at the end of the day, injuries are, I mean, that you can't really predict that. I mean, they were able to, you know, obviously go 11-5, you know, the year that he got hurt in game one. And, you know, Matt Castle came in and nobody knew who Matt Castle was. And after that, nobody really knows who Matt Castle is. So I think the system is kind of predicated for him to be successful. So whoever the backup is, I'm not sure about Brian Hoyer per se, but I think he'll do better than probably any other team as a backup than he would on the Patriots. I think just the Patriot way, just how they have the guys that they have, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, you know, and Bill Belichick obviously running things, and they still have Josh McDaniels running their offense. I think they should be okay. I think unless they really, really actually see some sort of actual decline in Tom Brady's play, I wouldn't waste my pick on a quarterback. And I think the defense side of the ball is where they really need help. And I think if I'm going to, you know, if I was the Patriots, I would be putting all my eggs in that basket to make sure our defense starts getting better because we gave up a lot of yards and points to the Eagles.
That is true. And Malcolm Butler could at least slow down maybe 30, 40 yards of that. So,
yeah.
So, speaking of slowing down, this new targeting rule where you can't lower your head at pretty much any point in the game, that's going to slow the game down because of all the flags we're going to see. What are your thoughts on the new targeting rule?
It's terrible.
It sucks. It's dumb.
I don't even understand how who sat in the room with all the other people and was like, hey, guys, we need to take this into consideration and really try to figure out a way to take out this. Using the crown of your helmet is done on probably over 90% of football plays that happen every single game. So, I mean, if there's a, you know, fourth and one, right, you're saying, like, the quarterback can't sneak the ball because now he's going forward with his crown of his helmet and then he rams into somebody else that's trying to play defense against him. I mean, a running back running 15 miles an hour and a DB running 15 miles an hour and they're not even running straight towards each other. One's coming from an angle and the other one's running straight or in an angle. And then how do you expect the crown of the helmet not to be a part of the game? Like, you know, my whole thing is at the end of the day, like, you know, when you're playing Pop Warner, okay, then you move into, like, you know, middle school, high school, and then, like, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a coach or two, you know, while you're in high school that probably says, like, hey, like, you know, you can go to college, and if you work really, really hard and take care of your body and work out and all that stuff, you might have enough talent and, you know, to where you can make it to the pros. Well, now when I go to college and I feel like, hey, I have a chance, like, I'm going to work that much harder and that much harder. But that person and every other person that comes before them or after them, they all know what football is and the ultimate sacrifice you have to make. I mean, injuries are part of every sport. But football, if you accept it, that means, like, hey, be prepared for head injuries. Be prepared for this. Like, so, you know, why can't it be just a system? Because they're really, really doing it because they don't want to get sued later on by some of these guys. Okay, well, make it to where, like,
they got to sign a waiver or something.
Well, not only sign a waiver, but also make sure that their health insurance is taken care of for the rest of their life. But if they have head injuries, well, it's more cost coming out. It's not like you're just going for a routine checkup. It's like constant, you know, whether it's medication, procedures, and all this stuff. And at the end of the day, it's costing the NFL money. When I'm like, you're a
billion-dollar industry. Come on.
Every year, right? So it's like, as much as you are, you know, you don't want to be paying out people every year for health insurance coverage. Well, then, but you're going to only make more and more money every year. And with the television deal and stuff like that they have coming down the pipeline eventually, like, you can't tell me that you can't figure out a way to do this. And so don't do it, you know. Okay, well, then do, you know, put out research into getting better equipment. If that's what it's going to take to lessen the load of potential head injuries and things like that. You're talking about now potentially taking away the kickoff. Like, come on, man. I mean, like, you already moved touchbacks to the 25, you know, or no, like, where the kickoffs are from the 35 so that there's more touchbacks, because when it was on the 30-yard line, there wasn't as many touchbacks. There's more returns, and the more returns there are, there's more violent in the hits. But, yeah, these guys know that. These guys don't want to change the way they play. Like, or you can't just do it, like, from one season to other. There's no, like, training. There's no, you know, like, wherewithal to, like, just not be advanced forward thinking. Like, this is where I feel like the NBA is way ahead of the NFL when it comes to stuff like this. It's like, you can't just put in rules just because it's affecting your bottom line and that's it. Like, you gotta, are you even talking to the players to figure out, like, hey,
They can't be talking to the players. They're probably talking to former players, not the players that are playing now.
Exactly. And even future players. Like, I don't feel like the guys that are in college would be like, oh, like, well, the rule exists pretty much everywhere, you know? So to get thrown out the game, like 15-yard penalty and stuff like that, it's just like, you know, what if it's, you know, to go for, you know, fourth and one at the goal line? Like, you're telling me that I'm going to more than likely throw, well, I know how to play defense on you then, you know what I mean? So it's just a terrible rule, man. I don't understand, like, what their thinking is, and it's just a shame that, I mean, they're literally taking all the thrills of watching football. I know it's a violent sport, and guys are getting bigger, faster, stronger, but that's just part of, like, human nature. It's just evolving. That's all it is. Like, you can't tell me that they're, like, you can't just leave it the way it is and figure out a, you know, scenario plan to take care of your players after they're done playing.
Yeah.
And, It's just a shame. I mean, you might as well just play flag football at this point.
Long story short, stop trying to take the football out of football.
No fun league. It's
not a safe sport. You just got to deal with it.
Right.
All right. So we're going to go down the lane. That's coming up next on Sports Life Talk. All right. Topic number one on down the lane. We're going to talk about the national championship that's going to happen tomorrow with the Villanova Wildcats versus the Michigan Wolverines. Serge, I'll let you go first. Who you got?
Got Villanova, man. Villanova, I mean, the way they came out, I thought Kansas was going to give a run for the money, and I wouldn't have been shocked if Kansas beat Villanova, but the way they played, I mean, it wasn't even close.
It was a beat down.
Yeah, they
gave it to them on both ends. Yeah. The fact that they were on fire, I don't think that's going to happen tomorrow night.
Right.
I think Michigan will play them a lot tougher, but I do agree with you. I'm going with Villanova to win this. What about the women's game? We got Mississippi State versus Notre Dame.
I mean, I'm going to have to go with Notre Dame. Just the mere fact that they beat the UConn women, man, I think they got the momentum on their side. And, I mean, they're an excellent team to begin with. They got a lot of really, really good talented players. I mean, a couple of the girls that probably, you know, going to be good WNBA players, too. So, I'm going to have to go with the Notre Dame women and Villanova on the men's side.
Well, the fact that Notre Dame beat UConn girls, that, you know, how upset I was about that. I'm going for Mississippi State to beat them. So I'm going out of spite on that one.
Vendetta.
And let's go ahead and talk about what we talked about last week with the UConn women's dominance. So that really didn't play a factor the other day. So I guess that answered its own question pretty much.
Exactly. I mean, it was Lisa Report that wrote the article, right? I mean,
yeah.
Well, there you have your answer. Are they bad for women's basketball? Well, you don't have to win every year. You can be the best team, have the best players, but, I mean, shoot, they got the number one player coming out of high school next year.
Who can dunk? It doesn't matter. We get to the Final Four and can't win. That's 2 years in a row. So let's move on. Let's talk about Darius Bazley. He's the high schooler who decommitted from Syracuse, and he's going to join the G League. Do you think this is a smart idea?
I think it's a very smart idea. I think if he knows that he's heavily touted and he's got the talent, he's like, okay, instead of going to college and learning a system that's, you know, basically for college, I get to go and play in the G League where, you know, the guys are going to be bigger, stronger, faster, and probably more suited to look like the guys that I'd be going against when I do make it to the pros. And I get to kind of get that experience under my belt now rather than wait. And it's a quicker way for me to get to the league or have eyes by scouts from those particular teams or other NBA teams to be able to really get a good look at me and know that, you know, even the sets that they run in the G League are more, you know, suited to what they actually run in the NBA as opposed to in college, you know, with the rules are, you know, from the shot clock to the three-point line to, I mean, there's just so many different variations that in college that, you know, that it is different in the way you play. So I think it's really cool that, you know, this, because of this opportunity is there for him. I think it's prime that somebody, you know, took advantage of it, and you know, we'll just have to see how it pans out for him.
And remember, this is what LeVar Ball wanted to do, create a league for a young man to go do this, but it's already established in the league. So I'm with you. Hey, take advantage of the system that takes advantage of you.
Yeah.
Because college isn't for everybody. We know that. We've both been to college. We graduated, but we have friends that didn't. So,
right. Hey,
do you.
And he was going to Syracuse. I mean, Syracuse, yeah, all the stuff that they had going on. And
yeah.
They haven't had like a top five or I don't even think top 10 recruiting class in probably over a decade. So, it's like, okay, I can go play in Syracuse, but am I gonna even like potentially compete for a national championship?
Yeah,
and then, like, is it really worth it for where I really am trying to go? And I think that's the thing. Like, oh, the G League is there. Let me go and work out and play with NBA guys who are trying to also make it to the league, just like myself. So I'm gonna get better because not everybody that's on a college basketball team. There's guys on the team that they know they're never gonna make it in the pros,
yeah,
but they're there for their education. They're a athlete student.
Okay, so just bow till you fall. You can take advantage of the system. Do that.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about the Boston Celtics. Do you think that they can win a first-round series without Kyrie?
100%. I think the way Brad Stevens' system is, I think the way that some of their younger guys who have gotten to get more minutes because of injuries – you look at from the point guard position, Kyrie's out, Terry Rozier comes in. He's, you know, he's been a guy that you've kind of had to like mold. But you see, like, he's having a coming out party this year. I mean, he's dropped a couple of 30-point games, and you mean to do that in the league, especially at that position in this day and age, it's not easy. So he's got the talent. You know, he can shoot threes, he can drive to the basket. He's very explosive and athletic. You know, and then you got Jason Tatum, you know, and Jaylen Brown, who, because of Gordon Hayward's injury, obviously got also a lot more playing time than they probably would have under normal circumstances. This is also given opportunity when Al Horford's been out for Marcus Morris to step in and get more minutes, and he's been playing really well. So they just have a lot of, like you mentioned earlier off air, like a lot of two-way players, you know, who they can utilize as switch on pick and rolls.
Can you imagine them playing small ball next year?
Yeah, it would be ridiculous. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why I was just like really thinking that with the number of assets and draft picks that they have, that they would have really taken a shot at trying to go after Anthony Davis. But because if the system is super predicated on just guys moving without the basketball, cutting, you know, always helping the helper on defense, and just being able to, when you're able to switch everything and all the guys are between 6'3 and 6'8, well, and a lot of the other teams in the league are kind of in that mold and trying to go, kind of trying to be like another Golden State Warriors lineup, you know, with a lot of being able to switch, whether even when you go to the bench, are you able to kind of mimic the same thing that you have with your starting lineup? Well, they've been able to win a lot of games without their top one for sure player, or sometimes their top two or three players. And I'm just like, the only way you do that is by a system that is predicated on a guy's playing hard. And it's like the San Antonio Spurs, is like, you know, when they used to rest all their players, but they would still beat teams with Duncan, Ginobili, Parker, even Kawhi not playing, is because of how the guys come in and play the system and play it to a T. And so I definitely think in a first round series where they're pretty much locked at the number two seed, so they could play the Wizards, they could play the Bucks, they could play, well, so that Miami. I mean, I think those are the three teams that they more likely will play. And I think they could beat any of those teams without Kyrie.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I want them to just throw all their eggs in the basket and go after Anthony Davis, because they will have a dynasty. Nobody would be able to touch him if they get that guy.
I know.
Even Boogie Cousins. But I don't know if his attitude would fit Boston. So Anthony Davis, I'll go with him.
Yeah.
All right. So it's official. Steve Kerr agreed with what I said last week, that the Golden State Warriors can win without Steph Curry. You heard it, I heard it, I'm a genius, so we're going to move on to the next one, all right? All right, let's talk about the process panning off this season. The Sixers are a playoff team, and they're a serious threat in the East. But Joel Embiid, he got hurt.
Yeah.
Had to have surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see them making it past the first round? How far do you think they'll go?
I think if Embiid is not playing in any of the games,
They're not going to make it out of the first round.
They're not beating the Wizards. They're not beating the Pacers, which would probably be the two teams that they more likely would face. They're not beating either one of those teams if they don't have Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid comes back somehow. I mean, luckily it wasn't a knee or a leg or, you know, an issue or even your shooting hand. And it was, you know, orbital bone. I mean, having the surgery. So it's a very, you know, dynamic injury to happen to figure out, like, you know, how well can he come back and play? Like, you know, can he see the basket really well? You know, so those are going to be the things for me. But it's kind of sad because, like, you know, they were playing really well, and then, like, oh, here comes Markelle Fultz back and bring him in the fold, and then he's the guy who ends up, like, hurting him. I mean, it was an accident, but it's just like, come on, dude, you just came back and you're getting our best guy hurt. And it's, so I think if they have him, man, they're a serious threat in the East. I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked if they could go all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals and potentially even win the Eastern Conference Finals because of the dominance that they have of Embiid with obviously Ben Simmons, and then Dario Saric, who was basically, you know, a runner-up for Rookie of the Year last year.
Yeah.
You know, and then now you got Fultz, who's, you know, just like Ben Simmons, like, you know, he don't shoot a jump shot. So even if Markelle Fultz can't shoot a pretty jump shot, as long as however he shoots it, it goes in, or he's able to be a playmaker, maybe not to the caliber of Ben Simmons, but he still can score the basketball. So, I mean, they just got a lot of, you know, they picked up, you know, on the sly, kind of, you know, picked up Marco Bellinelli and Ilyasova just to kind of give him depth, you know, at the wing spots to, you know, off the bench. But that don't miss a beat either. But, like, man, they're a scary team for the rest of the league for coming for a long time. But even this year, like, I know they were going to make the playoffs for sure, but I didn't know they were going to be a top four seed.
Yeah, I agree with you. So let's talk about Isaiah Thomas, who finally had surgery on his hip. When do you see him playing next year?
I think he'll end up probably playing with the Lakers. You know, probably sign him. You know, they said that they're only willing to give him a 1-year contract so they can keep their options open for you know, summer of 2019 when, you know, Klay Thompson's going to be available, Kawhi Leonard's going to be available, and a couple other guys. But you know, it's kind of sad, but I think this actually having the surgery now, as opposed to not doing it last year, I think it's probably going to be better suited for him. I just don't know how long he's going to be out. I'm pretty sure he's not going to be back at the beginning of season next season, but he doesn't really have too many options unless he takes a large pay cut. Because I know he probably wants at least, you know, $20 million. I don't think he'll get
that. No, he's not getting that.
He might be lucky to get 14, 15 on a 1-year deal, a prove it year kind of deal, but if he wants that multi-year deal, then he's probably going to have to bring that number down to closer to 10 if he wants it.
Yeah, because I'm an organization. I'm not giving a 5'9 underdog with a bad hip a large amount of money. Yeah, he can't play defense. So, I mean, it couldn't come at the worst time. He was saying, yeah, they're going to have to back the truck up for me. But now, hey, you may have to drive the truck, you know. Yeah. So I feel sorry for the guy. I want him to get his money, but he probably won't get it.
Yeah, and it does, you know, by him getting injured now and having the surgery – you know, if anybody had doubts about, like, oh, are the Cavs maybe going to regret making this move early in the season? Clearly not.
Boy, they look smart now, don't they?
Yeah. So.
All right, so let's talk about Kawhi Leonard. Do you think he would finish his career in San Antonio?
Finishing his career in San Antonio, probably not, but I do think that he'll still be there next year. I think his personality, from the way I've read him and the way the Spurs organization is, even though they've been at this crossroads about his injury and stuff like that, I just feel like that, you know, greener pastures are going to come on the other side, which is kind of similar to, like, LaMarcus Aldridge last year, you know, who he said that he didn't really want to be there. He asked to be traded, but then, you know, Popovich basically talked to him and just let him know, like, hey, like, you know, why don't you, like, play like you did in Portland? Like, you know, we'll run more offense through you, and so that you don't have to feel like, even with Kawhi on the court, you know, we'll still make sure that you're a, you know, featured guy. Like, you know, what kind of how similar to you were playing with Damian Lillard back in Portland. So I do think that he'll still be there another year, but beyond that, I think when he becomes a free agent, more than likely, he's probably not going to be there. So I don't see him finishing his career in San Antonio, no.
I don't see him finishing next year. I think he's really upset with Ginobili and Parker, how they came out and said, oh, my injury was 100 times worse. Come on, man. How can you say that?
Yeah, I know.
You stay hurt. I mean, Tony Parker, you're hurt all the time. So this is something really serious for Kawhi, and you should really have his back because he's your future.
Exactly.
You're a second tier player now, a third tier player now, because Patty Mills is better than you.
Oh, for sure.
So I think
DeJounte Murray too.
So. Yeah. So I think all of this is going to come to a head, and he's not going to stay in San Antonio anymore.
I just think that because he has a year left on his contract, unless he comes out and says, like, I want to trade. And I just don't know if it's with his personality, it just doesn't seem like he would be the guy to say, like, I'm going to run from the situation and I don't want to be here. But, hey, with all the stuff, like you said, that's been going on with the team, you know, your team is calling you out. It's one thing to get called out in a meeting.
You're getting called out by Tony Parker. Come on. Like, he's a tough guy.
Right. I know. I mean, Ginobili, too. It's just like, and it's like, I think it was Steven Jackson who said, like, you know, those guys wouldn't say that if they not only felt it, but it wasn't coming from somebody up
coming from Pop. They said coming from Pop.
So with that, it would be the only caveat to be like, hey, I want to be traded. And then it's like, you know, there's 29 on the team that would line up to get his services.
Yeah, so. And then back to Tony Parker. He cheated on Eva Longoria, so I really don't like him. All right, so let's...
That's what it really was.
Yeah, that's just what it is. So let's talk about the 2018 Hall of Fame class that's going to have Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Grant Hill, Maurice Cheeks, Tina Thompson, Katie Smith, Ray Allen. out of everyone I mentioned, and there are some others, but we don't really know them, so I didn't break them up. Who had the better career?
Who had the better career? I'm going to go with Jason Kidd. I think Jason Kidd, coming out of college.
Out of California. He was a hell of a college player, too.
He was. And then coming into the league and, you know, obviously there's some similarities as far as comparing him to Lonzo Ball in the sense of, like, where he didn't have a jump shot coming out of college. But, man, his vision, the way he passed the ball,
man,
you know, so coming to Dallas and playing with Jamal Mashburn and Jim Jackson.
The three J's, and they let Tony Braxton break us up. Right. It's always a woman. It's always a woman.
And then he went to Phoenix. And then from Phoenix, he went to New Jersey. And when he went to New Jersey is when he probably really extended himself to be like, okay, I'm the best point guard in the league, bar none. There's no question about it. And then, you know, being able, you know, they went to the finals.
Two times in a row.
You know, with playing with Kenyon Martin, Richard Jefferson, Kerry Kittles, and those guys. You know, I guess as the latter part kind of happened, then he came back to Dallas and obviously going to the finals with the Mavs and actually playing the championship, even though he wasn't in his prime.
He had enough to shut down Dwayne Wade.
Right. You know, obviously being a savvy veteran, you know, you basically kind of saw the IQ of him on the defensive side of the ball. And then, you know, throughout his career, he just became better and better at that set 3-point shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, so to be able to be, you know, top two in assists all time, top five in 3-pointers made all time, and I think being able to play for multiple franchises but never really declining, really ever seeing a true decline in your play until at the end of his career when he went to the Knicks after he won the championship, it was really the only thing you can point at. So I think his leadership, somebody that didn't have a lot of athleticism and things like that, for him to be that good and that consistent, and he made a lot of, I mean, man, his highlight reel is unbelievable, like the kind of stuff that he would try on court. You know, he's got that little bit of, you know, Magic Johnson flavor to him. So I would say Jason Kidd, but, man, you can't really go wrong with any of these guys. I said a lot off the air, the guy that I would have picked for sure would have been Grant Hill if he never got hurt. But
yeah, he's in the top five of what ifs.
Exactly.
But I'm going to go Ray Allen, because before Steph Curry came, who was considered the best shooter? It was out of him and Reggie Miller, and you would probably give it to Ray Allen.
No, Ray Allen, for sure.
So, and he had a hell of a career in Connecticut. He's won two NBA championships, and he was very instrumental in that Game 6. Was it Game 6?
Game 6 against the Spurs.
When have you ever seen a guy just step back, don't look down, and just ice a three?
I mean, I still remember what I was doing, where I was, who I was watching the game when. Right now, even right now, like it was yesterday, like that play, because I was like, I cannot believe the Spurs are going to win another championship. And I was just like, I hate the Spurs.
Yes, so much. With a passion.
And I was like, you know, because LeBron had already won a championship, I was like, okay, yeah, it's going to be another loss on his record. But I was like, man, come on, Spurs, really? And then, man, when Chris Bosh got that rebound, I was like, what does he do? Okay, he hit Ray Allen, and he looked down. And, I mean, that was a...
But he
jumped up and down.
But he didn't even look down, Serge. He just scooted back and shot it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to go, okay, here go 3-point line, then I'm going to shoot it.
And it wasn't like it was wide open either.
No. It was contested.
So that was, I mean, I don't see how that's not the greatest shot in the finals for sure.
You know, that's going to be the Jordan when he pushed off. But it's Ray Allen, hands down.
Right, because if Ray Allen misses the shot, the series is over. If Jordan misses a shot, there's still a Game 7.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of like a do or die. You have to say that was a way better shot. More clutch.
Way better.
I mean, it was – and
it
had a trickling effect for the rest of what happened after that too, right? Like if he hits a shot, okay. If he doesn't hit the shot, it's like – LeBron loses, you know, would they come back and try to, you know, change a lot more things the following year within the team? Like, you know, maybe Chris Bosh would have got traded. You never know what could have transpired if he didn't hit that shot. So there's just so much that happens.
I would say that was probably the most clutch shot I've ever seen.
No, hands down.
Maybe that'll be a segment for next week. We find out all the clutch shots besides Reggie Miller in New York shooting, 9 points in like 8 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about LiAngelo Ball, how he has declared for the draft. Do you think this is a good idea?
It's a good idea for him to, put his name out there, keep himself in the news, keep the Ball family in the news. It's good for the brand. But as far as his talent and his skills, to compare it to the guys that are coming out of college who have declared, it's a pretty deep draft. So I just don't know where he fits in. But could he be one of those guys who enters the draft, doesn't get drafted, and goes to the G League and gets picked up by somebody? Maybe. But, I think this is kind of what they had in mind, what LeVar had in mind is, taking him out of school and just putting him overseas, and then he can still go ahead and declare that way.
So. Yeah, but the thing is, he's not even killing overseas. Right. He wasn't even – they always said, LaMelo was better than him.
Right.
So if I'm him, if I don't make it, I will go to a G League, give it a tryout, and then I go try to play tight end in the NFL.
Well, he dropped 72 in a game last week.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he dropped 72 in the game last week. He dropped 72 at the same game his brother dropped 36.
LiAngelo dropped 72?
72. Yeah, he dropped 72 in the high school game before, too, but he dropped 72 overseas against probably obviously bigger guys.
In Lithuania, though, right?
In Lithuania.
I'll probably go and get 30 in Lithuania. I'm not giving him any credit for that. All right, so let's move on. Oh, well, before we move on, I want to talk about Tina Thompson. She's one of the most underrated women players, ever, because on that team, it had Cheryl Swoops and Cynthia Cooper, the Houston Comets, and she was like an afterthought. So I just want to give her a shout-out, because she was one hell of a player,
she
man.
She
went to USC, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
and
so,
she was on a couple of the USA basketball teams, too.
Yeah, I know a lot of people know her, and they know that she's a great player, but I don't think that's mentioned enough. So shout-out to Tina Thompson.
Definitely.
And Katie Smith. She's a hell of a shooter, too.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about Mark Cuban. This time, we'll do it quickly. He's feeling the heat again. This time it's for racial discrimination. In 2011, there was a noose found in a closet at the American Airlines Center. A key component in the racial discrimination complaint against a center operating company, that's the arena's managing firm. In a statement, Mark Cuban said, the complaint was an employee of the AAC. She did not work for me, nor did any of the other people mention. I'm a minority investor in the AAC holding company. As such, I was not involved from day-to-day operation of the arena. You could have to speak to the AAC general counsel for any further information. Is this a good look for Mark Cuban?
No, it's not. Definitely with all the other stuff that's already happened in the last month with him and the stories that have been coming out, and to reiterate the point that it was, back in 2011, that was the same year, we won the championship, so it was was it before we won the championship? Was it after where you just, started caring less about how operations were being run and you were, willing to, sweep things under the rug just because you were sitting on a high, just from winning the championship, you felt invisible. So, no, it's definitely not a good look. It's not a good look for Mark Cuban. It's not anything that's attached to Mark Cuban. It's automatically not a good look for the Mavericks. Anything that's not a good look for the Mavericks is automatically not a good look for the league. So, I'm still interested in seeing what they were going to do about some of the other stuff that came out. The NBA still hasn't actually came out and did anything about it or fined him or anything like that or take away draft picks. But this is definitely not a good look, man. And I don't, it's like, are we going to go every couple of weeks and keep hearing new things? And that it's just a shame. It just makes you think like what are really things that are going on an everyday basis, not just with Mavs or Mark Cuban, but just all around in sports and, people that are supposed to be adults. I'm not saying you have to run a tight ship, but it's more about there's got to be some kind of accountability, and it doesn't sound like there's any accountability and being taken care of your own responsibility. So
my thing with Mark Cuban, when is enough going to be enough? First, you had the FCC regulations.
Mm-hmm.
You had the sexual harassment going on at the workplace, him trying to put his hands down a woman's skirt in Portland. And now you got this. It's not a good look. And like I said, the past couple podcasts, it's probably time for Mark Cuban to get up out of Dallas.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, more of these stories that come out, the point that you made is making it more valid that, okay, he probably should be up out of here.
All right, Serge, so I'm going to go ahead and let you get off something that's on your mind. Serge is going to call out Kevin Durant. Why are you calling him out, man?
Oh, Kevin Durant, my my man, Kevin Durant. I mean, I really like him as a player. I really don't even have a problem with him, you know, as a person. I mean, sometimes, you know, he kind of goes astray and, you know, falls off the wagon a little bit, but because he gets his feelings hurt real quickly. No, I just have a problem with Kevin Durant because apparently he was on a podcast with Bill Simmons where, you know, he was on there for a good couple of hours, you know, talking about his career, talking about his days in Oklahoma City, and how he lived to win a championship and things like that. The same guy who said, you know, last year after the finals that he felt like it was like basically a passing of the torch, you know, basically insinuating that LeBron's basically passing the torch on to Kevin Durant.
Man, get out of here.
So to say that, you know, that he told Bill Simmons on his podcast that, you know, it's really hard to win in the NBA when, especially when teams are building their teams and ganging up to beat you. He is the last person that can say that.
And that's the second time he's contradicted himself, because you remember when LeBron went to Miami and they got that team, he said, man, what happened to the competitive nature of being a competitor?
Right.
So that's two times he's done that.
And you know, a lot of the things that's going on with him, you know, I mean, he's got the fake Twitter account. You know, and that also did, you know, that's just not because he gets so worked up and he gets so emotional about people like talking down on him. You know, I was thinking, you know, I was like, if the thing that he's doing right now, especially on the court, not playing, I'm talking about all the other stuff that he got, extracurricular stuff he's got going on with the referees and getting, he's got the most technicals ever in his career. He's gotten suspended 5 times just this year, and that's missing about 8 to 12 games. And you missed a total of, you got kicked out of 2 games in your entire career, and then all of a sudden 5. You know, it seems more like you're taking on the Draymond Green syndrome, like where his personality is not tied to him when it didn't have to. Like, you got totally 2 different people and players. And, you know, he's getting thrown out of games, he's getting technicals. I feel like, you know, he feels a little more entitled. I think he feels like that, hey, like, I'm the best player in the league now. Like, did you not see me, how I played in the finals? I won an MVP. I won the finals MVP. You know, I would, without me, we wouldn't have won. And now he feels like he should get that respect. And so, you know, because of that alone, he's just going after the refs. And, you know, the previous time he got kicked out of game, he's the same guy who came back and said, like, oh, man, maybe I did overreact. After watching his own replay, he realized that, like, oh, maybe I was in the wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have stepped up to the ref like that or said the same thing that I did. And I was watching the game, you know, earlier this week when they were going against the Bucks, where, you know, it was his first game back after missing 6 games. You know, and then, I mean, to be honest, Antetokounmpo was giving me the business.
Yes, and that's what it is. And I forgot who said it. I think it was Shannon Sharp. He made that exact point. No. The Greek Freak had like 14 points on you. 17 points in the first
half. I mean, and it was within the last 50 seconds of the first half, so he had already dropped his 17 points. And he was getting really physical with him. And, you know, he's got that rib injury, so I know he wasn't too fond of that. But okay, my thing is like, okay, you know, all right, you didn't get a foul called against you, so you're yelling at the ref. Okay, all right, you're going to get a T. That, I mean, I think you kind of wanted a T at that point. But then to continue on, it's like, oh, like, I'm going to just keep doing this because, like, I'm that pissed off that, you know, maybe I'm thinking that, like, I should have it a little easier. Like, I should get the leeway or I should get the respect from the refs, because this is my whole thing. Like, you know, we saw LeBron getting thrown out of the game for the first time in his career early this season, and there's been some rift with the referees and, you know, some of the Players Association guys met with the officials, you know, during All-Star break. But my thing is, imagine if LeBron was the person that was – always getting technicals.
He would be crucified.
Like, super crucified. I'm like, if you're talking about, like, oh, these teams are ganging numbers to beat us, dude, you're on the best – you went and joined the best team that you were up 3-1 on, and you went and joined them after they already won 73 games and won a championship the year before you without you. And so you're the one who made the path to a championship the easiest out of anybody that's ever done, even easier than LeBron. So – and that's point number two. My point number three is, I feel like if you were to take a scale of backlash, 1 to 10, how bad of a backlash did LeBron get when he went to Miami? I would say probably a 10.
I'd say like 15, 16. Right? It's pretty bad.
On the same scale, how bad of a heat, if a 5 is just about right, how bad of a heat did you catch for going to the Warriors? I would say no more than a 7.
Yeah, I mean, I would give him a 6.
You know, because so as much as you want to be considered the best player in the league, you're not. I mean, just the fact that you have to do these kind of things to make sure that you're always in that conversation. No, like LeBron does one small thing, it's the biggest news on, and it's talked about first on any sports talk radio station. But when KD something happens, it's like the third or fourth. And so it's like he realized, like, man, I got a championship. Like, I feel like I've accomplished everything. Yeah. I won an MVP, but the things that LeBron is doing, I can't – no, I just don't see how he can compete with that, right?
He can
go win 2 more championships and be tied with him, or win 3 more and be 4. Are people ever going to say that he's better? I just don't see how
– Now, I will say if he wins 3 more championships, LeBron's and stuck at 3, right? Somebody will try that. But overall
– But then it's like, okay, but which team was he playing on, right? He's
good point.
He's playing on a team that he just said that – it's hard to win in the league, man, especially when you got teams that are building their teams to beat you. Well,
that's exactly what Golden State did for LeBron. Y'all came together to beat
LeBron,
him.
Right. That's the only reason.
Not you.
Right.
Him. He started this battle.
And now you're taking on the personality of another player on your team, which is Draymond Green. And where you don't have – well, where was this all before in OKC? And speaking of OKC – he also, I told you this off air, he told Chris Broussard of Fox Sports that he was a phony. He called himself a phony while he was in OKC, and now his version of himself in Golden State is a real him. And so it's like, so now we're getting to see the true colors. So all this anger and lashing out at the refs, is that the real you? You just didn't do it before because maybe the way they run that organization over there, they weren't as free, open-spirited, and minded. Like, they wanted to keep it more in control because, you know, we're in Oklahoma. Like, we're a small town. Like, we don't behave like that. Now that you're in the West Coast, you're in California, you got a championship, you got, you know, now you're able to kind of stick out your chest and be able to say things that without any ramifications. Because, I mean, dude, you're a grown man. You got a fake Twitter account so you can go after people. I mean, like, so it's just like piling on, and he's shooting himself in the foot as opposed to nobody's doing anything to you. You're doing it to yourself.
Yeah, I'll
be
yourself.
You say dumb things, you do dumb things, and then you do it on the court. And, you know, it's just like you can't take any criticism. Like, he just can't. I mean, dude, you're going to go down as one of the greatest players ever. At your position, you're going to be easily a top 3 player of all time. And you're going to probably be top 5, top 7 in scoring. You know, I mean, depending on how many champions you win, you're going to be up in that conversation for the rest of NBA lifetime. However long NBA exists, you're going to be in that conversation. You're first ballot Hall of Fame already. You can retire today. You're already that. But that still doesn't give you just the liberty to just like willy-nilly just say things just to say it. And not hold you accountable for saying those things because I'm always going to – because if you want to be compared to LeBron, well, we're going to go ahead and do that for you because you're saying that you're better than him or it was feeling like you got passed the torch on. But, like, he's not out there making these kind of statements. So he's not making these kind of remarks, you know. So I just don't get it. I like him as a player, but, man, like, at some point it's like – enough is enough to where, like, dude, just go out there and play.
Well,
like,
I heard that he had a really good PR team, so they kept a lot of stuff, you know, in-house.
Under wrap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, Kevin Durant, just shut up and play ball. Let Draymond Green be the bad guy.
Exactly.
He plays a role a lot better because that's really him. This isn't you.
Right.
This isn't you.
Because Draymond Green was this like this when he was at Michigan State.
Yes.
He was getting technical fouls, and he's been thrown out of the game in college before, so it's like kind of expected. He's got as many technicals as Rasheed Wallace. I mean, like, Rasheed Wallace, we know what kind of player he was. We don't look at Kevin Durant the same way.
No.
Even Charles Barkley had less technicals in a season than Kevin Durant. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, Charles Barkley still is on television talking noise, but you know that's been going on for 30 years, so you're not, like, surprised. But Kevin Durant, when he talks, is like, you went from being almost like a mute who would never talk, like a, you know, a little higher version of Kawhi Leonard, yeah. right? And then now all of a sudden, all you do is talk because you're just being able to put out your chest because, like, I got a championship and nobody can, you know, F with me, you know? That's basically how he feels, but...
Yeah, so...
Not to say what I had to say, man, because that was kind of bugging me that he can just like... on the Warriors with three other future Hall of Famers.
Talking about passing the torch. Get out of here.
Yeah.
All right. I hope you got the ointment because our ringworm segment is next on Sports Light Talk. All right. Last week we talked about Daniel Bryan coming back, and now we've heard that it'll be a match. Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, who recently had surgery, so I don't know how that's going to affect the match, versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. What does Shane's surgery mean for this match? Do you think it's going to happen?
I still think it will. Whether they somehow last minute, you know, Shane comes out and says he can't perform, but, you know, finds a replacement, that'd be pretty cool. It would probably be a surprise wrestler, I would assume. But just to be able to see Daniel Bryan back in the ring is just going to be amazing. I mean, the crowd is going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be the biggest pop of the night.
Oh, that's gonna be the big spot for sure. I mean, I'm just excited to be able to see him wrestle because he is a great, like, technician wrestler.
Yeah,
he's a super, and he's got the, you know, he's got the whole package, like the whole charisma and all that stuff too. So playing into his character, but the Yes Movement, man, it's.
I may buy a Yes shirt and come to your house next Sunday. Just to be honest. Now, what I don't want them to do is rushing back too fast. Say that Shane isn't ready, so now it'll be a handicap match.
Right.
So I don't want to see anything like that, so hopefully it doesn't happen. All right, speaking of maybe if it's going to happen, do you think we will see The Undertaker tomorrow for Raw?
I don't know if we'll see him physically on Raw. I think because of John Cena's challenge after challenge after challenge.
Which was a bad build-up. I didn't like this
build-up. Yeah, I don't either. Because it's like, okay, now you're just, like, repeating the same stuff every week, and then it's just like, you know, does John Cena basically have to beg for somebody that's a Hall of Fame wrestler to come back and say yes to wrestle? They could have just done it in a better way, and I, you know, is it because, like, you know, Undertaker isn't really ready to, like, make appearances every week, and, you know, whether it's on the mic or just to be able to come out there, you know, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But they could have done a better job of, you know, hyping it, building it, and where it was just like it was already a match that was already made, and now you're just, you know, hyping it, and John Cena could still do things he does, and Undertaker could have still, you know, did his old lights and things like that between while John Cena's in another match just to kind of give a point of there's that build-up was still there, you know what I mean?
So, you know what I would have liked to see now that I think about it? They should have had John Cena going against Kane, like, every week. Have it where John Cena just loses his mind and beats the hell out of Kane, and guess who shows up?
To save him.
The right. Undertaker with a cane. Right. So that could have been a better build. And hopefully after this, you know, I want to see John Cena just be a heel for a couple of months.
Yeah.
You could be a great heel the way you speak. You can talk bad about anybody.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what we need to see. Maybe him and the Authority. That would be a perfect storyline. And have Daniel Bryan when the brand split, Cena versus Bryan.
God, man, can you imagine if that match happened next year at WrestleMania? It would be...
That's perfect. Please, if anybody for WWE listen to this podcast, make it happen. We're going to send this to a whole bunch of wrestlers, too. We're going to cut this up.
Tag them up.
All right. So, Braun Strowman, he still doesn't have a partner. And I've been reading that maybe Rey Mysterio will be his partner at WrestleMania. It's something that I don't want to see. We've already seen the Kane and Bryan, Daniel Bryan bit.
They get small.
Yeah, but they made it work because of their charisma and chemistry. Mysterio, he isn't great on the mic.
No, and he doesn't have a chemistry with Braun Strowman to be just randomly just come out and do that. He doesn't have anything to do with the bar. Like, there's not anything there. There's no history there. So if they're going to make it somebody that's of a surprise, I mean, they could pick. There's other guys that they could pick from that normally isn't a every week wrestler or not even really on the roster.
But like I said, told you a couple minutes ago, I like to see Dean Ambrose come back. If they're not going to use the Shield together, which we're going to talk about right after this, who has beef with the bar? Yeah. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, they had that beef, so that would be the perfect replacement if he's healthy from that torn bicep, which I've heard he's having complications, but that may just be a bit to throw us off.
Right, right.
So we still got Lashley out there that could possibly be it, and Kane, and I hope not, hopefully Samoa Joe. So we're thinking about that. So speaking of Dean Ambrose, if he comes back and say he's not his mystery partner, Strowman's mystery partner, should the Shield get back together and stay together?
I think so. I think every time they've been together, it just feels like Raw is more fun to watch. I think, you know, because it's like it's kind of like you never know when they're going to come out, who they're going to attack, you know, who they're going to protect or whatever you want to call it. So, and their chemistry, how they are, you know, their music, you know, just the way they come out from the audience. I think it's the whole thing that they have going on with how they came to form. And obviously they went their separate ways so they can launch their own individual careers. But the fact that they can still have individual, you know, careers and storylines going, but they can still stay together and also bring out the Shield to do different things throughout the course of, and it doesn't have to be an every week thing, but I think it's just still good for the WWE just to kind of keep that in there so that you don't ever have to, no one's ever going to get shocked when like, well, that came out of nowhere. No, it's like the Shield is always the Shield. So you don't need a build up to bring them back together. They're always going to be tied to each other no matter
what. Yeah, just like the Four Horsemen, even they were competed against each other, they still were, you know, they were still boys.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to let a ringworm go by without mentioning Mandy Rose. That would never happen. But I want you to check out another one, Liv Morgan. She's on SmackDown. She's kind of like the Harley Quinn type.
Okay.
And another member of the Riot Squad that I've been noticing a little bit more is Sonya Deville. Check her out, man. Okay. Instagram, all their Instagrams I'm on, so yeah.
Speaking of Mandy Rose, how were you feeling when it almost looked like she was about to get broken into by Ronda Rousey?
Hey, Ronda Rousey got to go through me first. I was going to go, hey, you break my arm or you break Mandy Rose's arm,
yeah.
Damn it. Hey, we want to thank you for listening to episode 14. 14? Good grief. Are we sure it's 14?
Yeah.
Do we know how to count? Okay, episode 14 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. We want to thank Anthony Roberts and the Roberts Media Group, Blog Talk Radio, for giving us our platform, and you for listening. So tell a friend, and then have them tell a friend, and leave us some comments. Yeah, that we're going to all be friends. And next week when we come back, we're going to talk WrestleMania, all the matches and our predictions. And, of course, sports down the lane, tackling life, what's on our mind. We'll see you next time. This is Sports Life Talk. All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Yeah.